Hello and welcome to Between Two Cairns. I'm Yochai.
Hi, I'm Brad.
Hi, I'm Nate Treme, aka Highland Paranormal Society, aka greatest game designer of all time.
Oh,
aka the best to ever do it.
Whoa.
Aka mommy's handsome little man.
Oh, that was just uncomfortable.
That's how you do it. We got mommy's handsome little man on the pod, y'all.
Because we're all mommy's handsome little man.
you say that, but there can only be one, and we got him. We got him.
My grandmother used to say to me that I was her favorite, and I would say, "How do you know that?" And she would say, "Because you're the one who's with me." And I said, "Well, what if someone else with you?" And she said, "Then they would be my favorite."
This is like some Lifetime, feel good moment. I don't like the vibe you're bringing here.
It's not feel good. It's sad because I wasn't really her favorite. It was whoever she was with.
I think she's just practicing mindfulness, and I think you missed the lesson of that. And anyway, I don't like this kind of feel good vibe that you're bringing to the show. I think it's kind of with all due respect, not the vibe. Okay, we got mommy's little hot boy or whatever Nate called himself.
That's not what he said. Anyhow, today we're going to review Sacre Bleu, and before that, we will answer a question from the mailbag and have a nice chat with our friend Nate Treme.
Hey, Nate. What's up, Nate?
Hi, Nate.
Hey, what's up?
Yes, good to meet you in this form. Yeah, we are both longtime fans of both your art and overall design.
For yourself, bro. I'm a longtime super fan, all right? Okay. I'm way beyond where you're at, all right? Get on my level.
What were you getting his dungeon junk mail Patreon stuff?
No, man. I don't back at the physical level because I don't have room in my house for any more stuff, but I still appreciate it digitally, okay? It's just, be at my level, man.
I so regret taking down. I kept thinking, I just buy his stuff later anyway, so what's the point of dungeon junk mail? And then so I went down a notch, and I really regret it because there's stuff that only showed up there that it doesn't really ever see a print version, or it's included as part of some other thing. Anyhow, Nate does work under the Highland Paranormal Society banner, and it is wholly unique. There is no other Nate Treme. It is colorful and cartoonish and interesting. I'm talking about his art, but then also it's, there's a minimalist design behind a lot of the actual adventures and systems. You've put out so many. I think folks will probably know you best for Tunnel Goons, which I've run a ton of times and I'm a big fan of, as well as Prol and Dogtooth Valley, which we reviewed on this very podcast, In the Light of a Ghost Star, which I also have and have run a few times. Love that game. You just do a lot of really interesting stuff that no one else is doing. So we're just excited to have you here and looking forward to talk to you about this very interesting zine that we are reviewing today.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, Nate, how's it going? Nate, how's stuff?
It's pretty good. I'm on spring break right now.
So yeah, spring break.
Have this whole week without work. It's pretty awesome.
Spring break.
Yeah, are you still doing drone photography weird stuff, or is that?
Yeah, I do fly a little FPV drone. So not really for photography; it's just for flying around. It has the nice photography ones are pretty expensive. I have a cheap one that's just kind of for racing and stuff.
Cool.
But bad VHS quality video. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's that's part of the charm.
Oh yeah, I love it. It's great.
It's that really vaporwave aesthetic. It's so hot.
Vaporwave again.
I'm still living in Windows 98. Nate, you seem like a kind of guy who I feel like you have a lot of passions. I feel like you're a real artist. You make music, you make art. You're a design guy. Where are you at right now? What's setting your heart on fire right now? As far as things you're inspired by or things you want to make or stuff like that.
Right now I'm trying to get into making films. Cool. I teach video design right now. It's a new job I started this year and gave me access to a bunch of really nice camera equipment. And here where I live, we have a local film festival that's pretty big called the Louisiana Film Prize. I just registered to make a short film for that. So I have until I think early July to make a movie.
So, sweet.
Yeah.
So you submitted, you know, the idea of a film, but you haven't actually made the film. Made it,
so I have to do that.
Yeah. I respect that.
Pressure is on.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I got to go ahead and sign up so that I feel like I have to do it. I paid $25 to register, so I have to do it, or I'm losing money.
Nice. Do you have like, I mean, do you have an idea? Is this, you know, what you're cooking here, or you're just going to let it happen?
I've got a couple ideas that I got to write out. I'm going to work on one. And, my sister-in-law is writing, she does a lot of acting and stuff too. So she's writing something too. We're going to try to make at least two films to submit. So
that's cool.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Nate, you seem like, respectfully, what I like about your style is you seem like a real punk. You know what I mean? You just have a kind of like, there's kind of a rawness that you just let it out. Yeah. But what I think is very annoying to me is that you seem very talented at all these things you pursue. So we don't get the punk aesthetic. We just get the ethos. You know what I mean? But I get the sense you probably at least have some education in some kind of design, because you seem like that's a little smoke in here. That's a little cooking. Is that accurate? Do you have like formal education in design?
Yes.
Where are you coming from background-wise?
Yeah, I studied art and design in college. Have a bachelor's of art in like communication design, something like that, whatever they were calling graphic design then. But so I've done design before doing RPG stuff. I was working as a graphic designer and designing a ton of show posters for local music scene and other stuff too. I've been doing graphic design forever.
With your RPGs, do you feel like design kind of influences the game, or like where does your like RPG process come from as far as that? Because I feel like design is really linked in with a lot of your work somehow.
Yeah, a lot of it, especially earlier stuff, a lot of stuff that I sent out through Patreon was very much deciding on like the size something would be printed on, and then just start that being like the starting point, and being like, you know, I have to make it fit on this. Mm-hmm. So all that, designing for kind of the layout of trying to get different odd shaped things, seeing what I could do with them. When I made the first time I made the pamphlet dungeon was because
you invented those.
Yeah. I made
the first one. Brochure.
I did. Yeah. I made the first one. I'm sticking. It's a claim that I am sticking with, that I made the first one. So I had at my work, I found this paper folder that folded things into like a trifold. It was like this old machine that barely worked. So I was like, oh, I can do this and not have to fold it. So I designed the dungeon, put it through there. It did not fold it correctly. So I ended up having to fold them by hand anyways.
Was that the like the bat dungeon or the, which one was that?
I think it was Bat Serpent. Temple of the Bat Serpent.
I've run that. That's a good one. That was fun.
I can't remember if I've run it, but I did steal from you after something you sent in one of your dungeon junk mail things. You sent, you were using those corner cutter things.
Yeah.
And I went out and bought one so I could start putting corners, and it just makes things look elegant.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. They feel neat. They don't snag in your pocket as much if the corner's rounded. Sure.
Well, I feel like I'm on Battlestar Galactica, because on that show, there never were corners. Everything had these like little edges. It's very futuristic.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's kind of turn in a little bit to more recent events. You were posting on various socials recently, you've been playing with kids a lot, and that made us think, hey, maybe it's time to ask this question that we've actually had for quite a while in the moot sack. So, why don't we take a quick question, and I'd love to hear your responses.
Start the questions. The moot sack.
We got a question from the moot sack.
The moot sack.
Let's pull it out.
The moot sack.
That's what we call our mailbag. It's just a cute little name.
Mm-hmm. So this is the question. It comes from, okay, I'm going to I'm going to butcher this because it's Polish. This comes from Divne Rybe, I want to say. Apologies in advance.
That seems, I want to believe you. It looks to me like Dzuwini Ribai. That's how I'd say it. But that's a dumb American guy trying to just read something.
I'm not 100%, but I think it means strange Pisces. Is that? Yeah. Anyways. All right. Which OSR modules do you consider good to run for kids? So far, I've tried Winner's Daughter, Fistful of Feathers, Spudfield Good Girl. I have never heard of that one, by the way. and Black Worm of Brandensford. How do you feel about running typical dungeon crawls, i.e. killing deceiving monsters and stealing their stuff? I enjoy their moral ambiguity while playing with adults, but have changing feelings when it comes to using them in kids' games. This is especially appropriate because you have written an adventure that I think is kid-oriented. Whose child is this? Is that?
Oh, yeah.
So I know that that's not kid-appropriate, but it does have a kid sort of.
Yeah.
Kind of.
There's a baby character in that.
There's a baby character. Yes.
Kind of the normal, baby character.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The holy of holies. So, I'll turn it to you first, Nate. You like running for kids. What's your advice? Mm-hmm. But also, what's good to run for advice? And have you heard of Spudfield Good Girl?
No, I don't know what that is.
It sounds like a band.
Great name.
It sounds like a band that a friend of mine was in high school.
Maybe like late 90s, early 2000s indie band.
Spudfield Good Girl.
It's a Path's Peculiar Free D&D
event. Oh, yeah. I like Path's
Peculiar. Okay. Yeah.
The Spudfield. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Cool.
That's cool. I thought they were trying to pull one over by saying a fake dungeon, see if they could trick us. But yeah, Path's Peculiar makes cool stuff.
Yeah, they did.
So what do you think?
So of course, like anything else, it depends on who you run it for, on the specific kids. I've definitely run some things that in the middle of running, I'm like, oh, I should have probably changed that. I was running, one of yours, Brad, the one in the lighthouse.
I saw a picture from that. Yeah. I was pretty psyched.
There was some
Sinister Secret of Peacock Point. Is that the one?
Yeah, that's it.
There was something, I can't remember what, there was something that I toned down because I could tell it was like kind of scary and something. So I toned down something. But they were, I think that kind of makes them more fascinated with it when they're like, oh, what?
Yes.
But even that from the beginning, they found like there's like a merchant cart that's been attacked, or wagon that they find. And like, I think I said, oh yeah, and there's like, there's a merchant there who's been killed. And like, they were like, he's dead? Like, what? And I was like, oh, yeah.
You can't do that.
casual murder is maybe not. They're not used to that in their games. So I was like, okay. I think you can run most things if you just tone them down when you need to. But I think it's unless it's something that you really have to change it completely to tone it down. I think kids can handle most things.
Yeah.
See, I have the opposite impression. Kids are psychopaths. My son, I ran Karen for him a few weeks ago, and just me and him. And I really wanted to make it clear that the person he was killing in, okay, so I'll, let me back up. So I ran this game for my son, and in the game, I set it up so that he was coming home late at night from some adventure, and he noticed some people outside his house. And so he like tried to stalk them, and he ended up following some of them back to their lair, but he got caught by them. So he had to fight them, and he ended up killing one of them, and the other one fled. And I gave him a choice. Do you want to hunt down the other guy or let him go? And he said, I want to hunt him down. And then I made sure he told me, like, are you sure you want to kill this person? Like I said, you could knock him out. You could do this. And he said, no. I stab him in the neck. Like he was God. Like, so, and I was like, okay, you do that. Like I tried to not make it that way. And he was like, no, we're going to do this. And violence is like the only answer, not just like the best answer. Yeah. He does not think of other way. I've said this before. Like his character has a recurring character he always plays in every game. And he has this ring that turns into a balloon. And I thought, oh, the balloon will help him solve problems. He uses the balloon to hit people. Like, he doesn't even use it as a balloon. So yeah, it depends on the kid and what they can handle. And mine's sensitive, but he's okay with imaginary murder.
Yeah.
I'm not like a child psychology kind of guy. Do you think, you know, I don't know, it depends on the kid, et cetera, but you know, do you think for a child, let's say a young child, 6 or 7, something like that, is it better to play with death as a real, like violence has real consequences, like make that something that is in a game, or go like Pokemon style where you fight so hard that you got too tired and you fell asleep and you wake up outside of the dungeon and death has no consequences? Like what's like worse for a kid's developing brain and like view on mortality and life and death and so forth?
I don't know what's better, but definitely, I mean, I do tell them in when we play that if their character dies and that character is gone, they'd have to make a new one.
That's hardcore. That's I like that. You know?
I'm such like a pushover DM though that like I rarely kill a character.
Yeah, but also, same. Yeah.
When I play, it's with my daughter,
killing everybody, man.
My daughter and nieces, and to get them to fight anything is really hard, actually. Like, unless I make it like something really gross, but like, if it's an animal of any kind, they just want to hug it. It doesn't even like cross their mind that they should be fighting things.
I guess
kind of great though.
Do they not play a lot of video games? Just curious.
They play some Roblox and Minecraft, but
I see.
Isn't that better? That seems like the true like OSR, you know, like like don't resort to violence as your primary method for communicating with
they come up with some creative things. And make me have to come up with things too, because I'm like, okay, well what's gonna happen now if they're not fighting? Yeah. And
that's true. Yeah. It's what you want in a regular game as well.
Yeah.
To be just for clarity, I absolutely do not hold back when I'm playing with adults. They die all the time. I kill people in lots of my games.
You're just saying
with kids. Yeah, with kids. Just because first off, it takes forever to create a character, even like Karen. So for them, I mean. So
that makes sense.
Obviously, I kill many adults in my games, but I do understand that kids are like, you know, they're all different, and I feel like parenting advice in general is ridiculous because it just doesn't translate. Like, you know, people will say things like, oh, you know, don't show a kid this movie or show a kid this movie for this. And it's like every kid is so different. They have different brains. Yeah. My kid plays Breath of the Wild. He's 6 and he beat all the Zelda games. He's really good at fighting games and like games that involve combat. Right now he's playing the Snufkin of Moomin Valley game, which is like a super gentle game. And he just wants to fight. He's like, why is this guy? He's like, I don't want to do that. That guy's bad. Let's fight that guy. You know, that's just his mode. And I didn't teach that. I mean, I don't think I tried to be, hey, maybe let's talk to the people instead. And he's nope.
Yeah, my son is still like a bit too young to play. Like he's sat with us at the table, but like, you know, 2 minutes and he's throwing dice everywhere and stuff. I feel like that's how he's going to be though playing. Uh-huh. Like he wants to hit things all the time. So I just think it'll change from kid to kid for sure.
So what about you, Brad? What's your general advice? What adventure? We haven't, none of us have answered the question, to be clear. Which adventure is good to run? I mean, I guess Nate kind of did by saying Brad's adventure, but rather than recommending that, which doesn't that have like a bee person or something?
Yeah, the insect creature that appeared, like that really scared them, but like not in a bad way, in like a good way. They had fun when it starts appearing and they start seeing like a humanoid figure in the swarm, and they were like, nope, they all ran. It was great.
That's cool. I mean, I kind of imagine that as like a, you know, like a Jason Voorhees kind of character.
Yeah. Right.
It's always
great.
Pursuing you, so yeah, I don't that does seem kind of freaky for kids, I would guess. I don't know, like I think, you know, like Nate said, adventures where combat isn't the most obvious answer or isn't the only answer to get through some challenges, man, I don't know off the top of my head like what would be a good one for that.
Well, there's plenty of good, simple. I mean, The Alchemist's Repose by Ben Milton doesn't have to have combat. It's all about figuring out how to make little robots do what you want inside of an alchemist laboratory. I think that one would be good. When I've run stuff for kids, it's always stuff I've done. But with the exception of Mouse Ritter, I ran the included adventure in the latest edition of Mouse Ritter that has the stump, welcome to Stump Town or something, where there's like a bunch of rats who live in a stump and they've kidnapped some people or something, and there's a giant snake. So basically anything for Mouse Ritter, I think, would be good. Yeah,
there's one called Hark Says the Frog Magus.
Oh, yeah.
That one's pretty good. Even though I think it's kind of been redone since I read that a while back. I think they have a new version, like upgraded version of it, but that one's really good.
Yeah. What about like, I'm thinking of like, you know, classic dungeons where there's less narrative, kind of less reason, kind of a mythic underworld. I feel like that might go over with kids who are, you know, just let the plot kind of develop, have fun opening doors. The plot becomes, you just met a lizard man who lost his, you know, teddy bear or something like that. Yeah. Does that, in your opinion, is stuff like that, is that sticking with the young minds, or do they need a more fixed, finite goal?
I think a lot of older dungeons are good because they don't kind of assume combat immediately, and especially if you use like a reaction table or something. You can, I think you can let the kids come up with a lot of stuff, and they're usually better at coming up with stuff than adults. Yeah. They'll do something creative, or they'll usually, like my group, they just never want to fight things. So I have to really push it for them to fight something, make it obviously, very obviously threatening. They don't want to fight anything. So, especially if you do reaction rolls, and don't just default to fighting. I think most of like those kind of minimally keyed old school dungeons, a lot of those I think work pretty well.
Yeah. That's cool. I might pull out something like Mike's Dungeon or something like that, where it's just, I get a bunch of, you know, I get a shell and a bunch of weird stuff in there, and I'm going to work out the details when I get there, you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
All right. Well, I can't mention, I guess, this without, well, whatever. I feel self-congratulatory, but I did design a sort of role-playing game with my son when he was 4 called The Dungeon Game.
Yeah, The Dungeon Game.
And the reason I'm mentioning is because it occurred to me that one reason I have not had to design adventures for my son is because we build this like dungeon together using these little blocks, these little, like, you can use Jenga blocks, but we have these wooden cubes. They're like, I think you can get like 100 and something for $20 or something. They're very inexpensive, but you make the dungeon first. And I have photos of this on the itch page. And then the kids populate the dungeon with monsters and treasure, and the treasure is like little jewels or whatever, which can represent like candy if you want. But you set it up, and then you just use the rules, which are very basic, and honestly I want to change them a bit, but they work great. They're just like a dungeon crawl where you can see every room, but the kids don't care, you know. And it's not quite a role-playing game. There's not really any role-playing, but it also isn't a board game, especially because of the collaborative aspect. Anyhow, I would say I would pitch that also if you want to play a game that doesn't have, that has like no build, like, I mean, really no build up for character generation. The dungeon
game
is
slick,
there.
Though. I've read that, and I think that's a good game. I think, that needs more eyes on it. That's a cool thing.
I think any of J.P. Kuvert's adventures are pretty kid-friendly.
We had
talked about discussing one of his adventures, and then I tried running that a couple times, and it just went bad for reasons not related to the game, to that. Tried running it after school one day when I was grumpy and the kids were all grumpy, and it just, no one had a good time. But I think it's a great adventure. I just like tried to introduce that at a bad time. But yeah. That's another thing with kids. You really need to check the mood of everyone at the table. I had just like prepped so much that I really wanted us to go ahead and play it. But when we started playing it, none of us were really into playing, and there was a lot of distractions. So that's a thing I think you have to watch out for with kids, is they're, I think they get distracted easier than adults. And they'll, in the middle of playing, someone will say something and then they'll immediately start playing something else. So you kind of take breaks and come back to it. But yeah, JP Cooper has a lot of great adventures that are, I think, really good for kids because they have great illustrations. Kids love seeing the illustrations.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, the art is so kid appropriate. I mean, I made a bunch of tokens, like printable tokens based on your and his art. I made, they're together. Like, so some of the public, the quote unquote public domain stuff you put out, like the little frog dude and stuff. I just made a bunch of VTT tokens and your tokens and his tokens, and I printed out. And I used my little circle cutter, which I also got based on some other Patreon I follow. And I made these little squishy tokens, and his are just like giant, you know, cute monsters. And next to these like strange Nate Treme illustrations, like, they work though. They're weird, but they work. Anyhow, all right. Well, let's move on to the main review.
Let us move on. I think we both know what time it is, Yochai. Right? You know what time it is. I know what time it is. Nate knows what time it is.
Don't do it.
It's time for a recurring segment.
Don't do it.
Little game we like to call So Hot or So Not.
Let's do it.
The way to play the game. Here's the rules of the game. Nate, we're going to read some prompts to you. You listen and you tell us if you think the thing we say is so hot, you say so hot. If you think it's not hot, you say so not. All right. Do you understand, Nate?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan. I love every episode when this segment happens. It's one of the best segments.
It's a very popular recurring segment. Yes. Yochai, are you ready to play?
You said you weren't going to do this.
We go. Okay, Nate Treme. So hot or so not? We're going to start with rolling dice. Rolling dice, Nate.
So hot.
What do you think? So hot. Okay, Nate, so hot. What about diceless RPGs? You like diceless RPGs, Nate Treme?
No, not hot.
No, oh, so not.
So not.
So not. So not. Hey, Treme, what about fishing? Do you like fishing? Do you think it's so hot or so not?
So hot.
So hot. All right. Yeah. We got a fish. We got a fishy man. Would you say you're a fishy man, Nate Treme? Would you say that about yourself?
No, I rarely go fishing, but I've enjoyed it when I have gone fishing.
What about fishing in RPGs? What about fishing in RPGs? So hot.
Oh, yeah.
So hot. Fishing in real life, fishing in RPGs, both so hot. What about drinking Mountain Dew, Nate? What do you think about drinking Mountain Dew?
Baja Blast?
So hot or so not, huh?
Baja Blast?
Baja Blast, any flavor. Yeah. We'll accept any flavor.
Hot.
So hot. Yochai, what about you? Mountain Dew, so hot or so not? What's it for you, Yochai?
How come you have to repeat the question every time you say it?
What about spaceship combat in RPGs? Spaceship versus spaceship combat. Is that so hot or so not?
So hot. So hot.
I haven't seen one that I like yet. I'm looking, and it never works for me.
Can I make a plug? Hold on. David Lombardo, a.k.a. Awkward Turtle, he has a mechanic in his Karen Hack Meteor.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read that.
He treats the ship as having stats, like as if it was just a creature. And so when a ability score gets damaged, it damages a system, basically. You like, and it's very straightforward. So it kind of uses Into the Odd style rules for ship combat. And I think it really works.
Is one person flying the ship and everyone else is just sitting there, though? That's my problem.
You should read the thing.
I'll read the thing. Okay, moving on. Pet rats. Nate Treme, having a pet rat.
Oh, so hot. My brother used to have two pet rats. So I had to watch them for a week. They're really cool.
Short lifespans, though, right?
I don't know.
Tragically short lifespans. Yeah, hot lifespan of a rat, so not. Unless you're not a rat fan, then that might be so hot. Cool. We just got 10 or 12 more of these.
Nate Treme,
what about ice levels in video games? When you're playing a video game and there's an ice level, is that so hot or so not?
They take the friction down so you slide around. That's great.
It's slippery.
So hot.
Yeah. You think it's hot?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
That's a spicy take. I think most people would say so not. I think it's too slippery and it's not fun. Yeah, that's my personal take.
I like
take.
In Mario whenever you're just sliding around. It's great.
Level 6, Mario 3, slip sliding around. Don't like it.
I was thinking about Mario as well, and I also enjoy it. But what I really don't like is games where you're slipping around and you have to do something as you're coming around a corner, and if you miss it, you have to go in a circle again. The number one thing I hate about video games is having to repeat myself. I don't like having to do a thing again. And I know that that's a lot. Like most platformers, that's what video games are. Yeah. I hate it.
You know, you play Diablo, you click skeletons 1 billion times and you win the game.
Yeah,
you know?
that's not what I mean. What I mean is here is like you're on a platformer and you're running and you fall in a pit and it takes you to the beginning and now you're at that pit again and you have to do that about 50 more times to get through a level. I just find that to be really dumb, which is why games that help you undo that, like Braid, where you can reverse time or any, you know, what was the other one? Owl Boy or whatever. I like the ones that give you the ability to be like, no, you don't have to do it again. Because that, I don't mind losing something, like losing hearts or whatever, but don't make me do the same damn level. Okay, you know what? You got me. I don't want to.
Okay, I got another one for you then. Racing games. What about Mario Kart? Huh? That's by nature loops. You're looping. That's so hot or so not.
I feel like
Mario Kart.
Mario Kart is a universal game. Like all groups of it's people.
One of the greatest games of all time.
Yeah.
What about Daytona USA? Daytona USA, Yochai. Rolling Start.
I don't know what that is.
Rolling Start.
Why do you repeat it? Is that part of the shtick?
Do you like the Rolling Start? I thought that was a good innovation. What that means.
Can we move on to the RPG?
Daytona USA, an arcade racing game. And the big innovation is that you don't start from not racing. The game starts and you're already driving. Mm-hmm. And there's a theme song when the race starts. This guy starts screaming. He's like, "Rolling Start!" Like, his beat comes in. It gets me pumped every time. Okay. I think Daytona USA, so hot. That's my personal take.
Okay. All can we move on from this?
More of a Drive USA person, but yeah.
respect. Okay. All right. Fine. I'm ready to move on.
God. I feel like someone has taken the breath away from me.
What about Nature Man? What about Country Music Hall of Fame inductee Farron Young? Shreveport's own Farron Young.
I support every Shreveport artist and glad they're getting recognition.
4 in the Morning, I think it holds up. I think it's a good song and I think it's worth listening to even today.
I'll be honest, I do not know the song.
Shreveport's own Nature May. Come on, Farron Young. You gotta know Farron Young.
Okay.
Shreveport's own.
Okay. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. Thank you for that. Thank you for being patient with this, Nate, while we suffer.
Yeah, that was great. I'm so glad I got to do Hot or Not.
It's not okay.
I'd like some like end credits music.
No, I'm not bumpering. Okay. You know? No, like, don't tell him that.
Just like some outro, like some nice piano, like look at back at all the memories we've had kind of thing. We can look at clips of Nate laughing and having fun, you know. I think that'd be a cool way to end this segment.
All right, cool. Yeah, all right. Moving on to our main review. Well, let me ask you guys a question first. How French should I go here with the title of this?
As French as possible.
Okay. So today we're going to review Sacre Bleu by Tito B.
There we go.
A. Now, this is a 14-page zine released onto the internets, I believe, on DriveThru. It's not on Itch's. I think it's just on DriveThru. I don't remember. I probably should have done some basic research here because I don't know when it came out. I think it was a couple of years ago.
I think it's older than what you think.
According to this, it's June 6th of 2018. So it's more than a couple years ago.
And it's on DriveThru for $1.25.
Right, it's super cheap. I remember that part. Yeah. Now this is written by Tito B.A., who I believe is a Brazilian. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And the art here, it's a mix of some public domain stuff as well as it's got maps by Marcelo Lee. And I was a bit unclear because there's one piece of art at the very end on page, there's no page numbers here, but like page 12 or something that I know I've seen before, but I don't believe is public domain, which is of this fungus goblin. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I want to say that I've seen that more recently. Like that doesn't look old to me, but I could be wrong. I've definitely seen it.
It's familiar, but I don't know where I would have seen it.
I feel like if it's public domain, I would have it in my repos, but anyways. So the art is mostly public domain, if not all. It is released as Creative Commons non-commercial. So people can, you know, remix it and stuff. Just they can't resell it. Which I always think is interesting to do for stuff that you're selling, you know, but it's all good. Brad, why don't you tell our listeners what this adventure is all about and describe the cover in great detail?
Cover. Okay. What's the little decoration in the back?
Fleur de lis.
Like the fleur de lis. We got some fleur-de-lis. We've got a big big goblin's face. This is like a zine-ass zine, man. Like the goblin's face has been colored red, but it's like the red's not in the lines. It's kind of spilling out of the lines here. Very, very, old school zine production quality. It looks like someone ran this off at a Kinko's. We got like Courier New. The text boxes are not really like lined up like at right angles. Everything's a little askew. Art kind of looks like it's been cut and pasted. I dig the old school vibe aesthetic here. I think this would really work as a printout. Anyway, plot wise, Sacre Bleu. This is a little island nation hex crawl. We've got a series of, I didn't count them, I would guess like 20 or 25 3-mile hexes about this island and the struggles it's having. This is kind of a town with a problem kind of adventure. The town on this island is called Erewhon, and it was recently attacked by goblins. They charged in, and the the presumptive mayor is this magic user man. How do you say that name?
Aljiba
the lion.
Aljiba maybe dead, maybe flew off on a flying carpet. Unclear. We got conflicting reports about what happened to the mayor, but he's gone. Also, the goblins had guns and grenades. So something funky is going on here. That's not normal for this world. So the PCs are likely going to pursue these leads and find the source of the goblins. They've also taken some captives. So I think the idea is probably get them back. But we have an island to explore. We have a town with a few different locations and counters detailed. And then we have a goblin dungeon where the goblins live. And then we also have like a little mini, like 3-room temple kind of complex too that you can stumble on. Your players are going to go into the goblin dungeon and just figure out what the heck is going on with these goblins. Where'd they get these guns? Why are they all speaking actual literal French? Like the goblins speak French. That's, again, not normal for this world. That's about it. That's about it. Either of you like to add anything without going into deep dive?
I feel like we can't review this without being deep dive because it's just so short and there's just so little there. Not that that's a bad thing, I'm just saying. Go ahead.
So there's some good little details. I really like that the weather table's pretty good. I like that you can have raining frogs. I really like that a lot.
I like that too.
All right. So this is pretty short, but there's a lot of text packed in. I stupidly printed it in booklet form, which
me too.
It was really too small. I should have done it in letter. There's some interesting stuff here. There's actually a lot here. I think the main problem I have with this is that it was hard. The information design was all over the place. So really important information is kind of spread out. Like, you find out early on that there's this kind of twist and so certain people who you think are dead are not dead and maybe related to the leader of this goblin clan or whatever. And that information is parceled out in such a way that I was very confused. Not just sort of like the series of events, but who was who, because there's multiple names used for the same character. And if you aren't paying attention, you kind of forget that. I just feel like literally one page that says like GM only that just had all this in bullets would have totally clarified that and then the rest could stay as it is. So I did have some comprehension issues. I think part of that might be language, although in general the language is very good. There's some stray Portuguese shows up, once it'll say like mapa feito com, and it says like in the map was made with Wadaboo's fantasy generator, and you just see random stuff like that, which I think is cute. But yeah, my general feel is I struggled with the layout and information design, especially due to how condensed it was. But that's kind of my non-spoilery review of this thing. If I could go ahead of Nate there. rudely.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree with that, that, yeah, there are some things, some of the relationships between some of the NPCs are not really clear until you read later on. And still, I still don't know if I have a full understanding of all of it, but there's so much in this, so much stuff going on.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on.
And I think, it does pretty good job overall, but yeah, there's, some of that info is spread out kind of in a strange way. Yeah, without going into deep dive.
Yeah.
It's not, can't say that much more about it.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of dancing around because the reveal of what really is going on is wild. I think it kind of sells it for me, is that this really swings for the fence here. Like, I don't know, this is a take on Gonzo that I am pretty...
It's not Gonzo.
Okay.
It's not. Gonzo is defined... No, Gonzo in this... Gonzo is when the strange is the normal. It isn't normal. It's strange. Okay. Like what is happening is okay. You know what?
Well, anyway, the stuff that's really going on is wild, and I think that that's what wins me over. Is that it's exciting and new for me. I wouldn't have expected this, and it was a surprise to read. I agree. The information presentation is a challenge. I mean, it's only 14 pages, so to some degree, you can kind of fake it. But still, there's like multiple, each terrain type has its own different random encounter table. And those are distributed throughout the entire book. So it's never really, I never really know where to look. I'm like, okay, I think they're in a swamp now. Mm-hmm. So like, where is that swamp table? It doesn't make this easy to use out of the box. The names I thought was a little confusing for me as well. Like the one, the adversary has a couple names and they're used pretty interchangeably. For me, this one was like kind of a fun surprise though. It was just not really what I expected going into it. I just kind of love that it went as far as it did. And, I don't know. Yeah. I think this would be kind of a fun one. The dungeon, I feel like the dungeon had some good stuff in it. And I think another strength of this is there's a lot of fun little details. It's never just oh, there's a tavern. We get like some little stuff about it that I think really fleshes it out. You can take like a hallucinogenic bath in one of the taverns. Like that's wild. Like the cleric will perform fertility rites and childbirth. Like, yeah, of course they will. But like just the fact that it's detailed makes the world feel a little more real. And I think that really makes it kind of an inviting and fun world to live in. And I see that in the dungeon as well, but there are some kind of like dead stops in the dungeon that I'm like,
No, I mean, that's all there is. It's just a single node with branching paths that come off of it. It's not a good dungeon design, but it is filled with interesting things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a non-obvious way to get in that is not fully fleshed out. I think there's like a crack on one side that I'm like, okay, I could call this like non-linearity that I can live with. I wish it was a little more varied in like how you can get through certain like choke points, which seem very like this has to be a big fight. And that was, I think, kind of disappointing for me. But overall, I think there's enough like twists and turns here that it held my interest and made this, something special. Something special.
Why don't we deep dive? So deep dive for Sacre Bleu starting now.
Deep dive. Spoilers.
Okay, what's really going on here? Who wants to reveal the big twists?
You reveal the twists.
Okay, well, the mayor is actually two people. He has a secret twin. The twin died, and the actual mayor survived but suffered a traumatic brain injury and is off recovering in a temple but lost some of his magic. The attack on the town was instigated by the mayor twins' father, who was transformed into a goblin and wants revenge on his sons. And... entered a dungeon and figured out how to open a portal through time where the goblins captured a World War I platoon of French soldiers and took all of their guns. And I guess learned French from them as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, they ate their brains.
That's right. They ate their brains.
Which is an amazing detail.
And some of the soldiers are still in the dungeon held captive, and you can learn about their plight. And you can open a portal to, like, I guess the portals have kind of like an on-deck kind of rotation. So you can open another portal, and it's something very bad. It's like a evil cockroach god. So this is really wild. There's like goblin choke points where they have rifles and grenades and stuff, and they're trying to ambush you. And it's very like suddenly modern warfare. Like you're dealing with like modern war tactics in a swords a fantasy game. So that's just crazy, man. It's crazy. I don't know. What'd you guys think about that?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. It is. Yeah, it's wild. It really goes for it. It's I wouldn't quite call it gonzo, I don't think, because I feel like it's not random. Like, there is kind of a story to it of like why there are French goblins, but it is crazy. But I love it. I love the I wrote down notes: French goblins A+, frog rain A+, portal jumping spacefaring agent cockroach people A+, time god roach aging people A+.
That's right. The time cockroach ages people.
The cockroach stuff is great. Yes.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed the explanation to how they got guns. I didn't have a problem with it at all. It is not gonzo. It is explicitly a weird thing happening to this world.
I don't know.
Therefore, it's not gonzo. I disagree with
you. I really think it's boring to endlessly argue what is gonzo, which is kind of also what this podcast does. I think
you should stop using it wrong.
I feel like if goblins are capturing a real world group of French soldiers from World War One, that's gonzo. That's pretty bonkos, man.
So I think that the notion of gonzo is, in my mind, that the strange is normal, and this is not normal, therefore it can't be gonzo. That's just my interpretation of it. We don't have to have this taxonomy debate every time, although I am willing to do that. That said, what do you think about the ambush by the old road?
It's kind of cool. It's very deadly.
Yeah.
I was thinking of how I would probably handle that. And I think it gives you a cool thing about this module is it gives you all these details that really get you thinking of all these different ideas you could do. So one of the things I liked that you mentioned was the taverns or the restaurants. They have like a little kind of detailed menu item for each one. I was thinking about the dry, one of them is dry fish snack.
Yeah.
That's like a bag of like sardines or something that are real salty and they leave scales everywhere. Like that. Yeah, I was thinking maybe have something like maybe goblins love those and like went disguised to buy some and or stole some, and so that you've heard that, and then you see maybe when you get close to the ambush, you see going off the road, going around to set up the ambush, a trail of fish scales you could follow, so you could come around back or something.
Yeah,
I know. I would definitely want to broadcast it as much as possible that you know there's something going on. I feel like it's pretty deadly. Yes. I don't know, it depend on the group, of course, if they're a very cautious group or not. But like if I was playing with the kids I normally play with, they would not be cautious at all.
I agree with Nate. I'd want to telegraph a lot of the information, but like I don't know. I just don't know still what do you do about it. It's just yes.
I like this. I it's a cool situation. Uh-huh. But as far as the game goes, like if they catch you and then they retreat and then everyone's like on high alert. Yeah. I feel like that kind of makes the dungeon a little worse if they're all on high alert. I'd rather it be more you're sneaking in there and they don't really know yet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
But it is a cool situation, but I don't know if I would like how I imagine it playing out.
Right, exactly. What would happen if literally they all get killed? There's no way the party would feel like the players would feel like that was a deserving failure. You know, like I feel like TPKs are great, and I think lethality is so important. Mm-hmm. And you know, I feel like I have this argument a lot with Sam Amelie about like what my players want and whether they are too scared of lethality. Mm-hmm. They embrace lethality, right. But they for them the game is staying alive. It's not dying a glorious death. It's staying alive. Right. And so, but when they do die or almost die or whatever, they want to feel like it came as a result of their own stupid decisions. And the question is, does this ambush provide enough of a framework for the players to feel like it wasn't just an accident? Too bad.
It's just like,
because no, people don't want that. People don't like
you
that.
You know, like I feel like I align very much with the Chris McDowell school of information presentation, where it's not fun to gate information. You tell everyone, hey, there's a trap. It's not so much like, fooled you. You didn't think to look for traps. You say, no, there's a trap. The challenge is, what do you do about it? You know, but that kind of school of thought, I think, is really at odds with the idea of an ambush. Like an ambush, the idea is that they're surprising you, And it's hard ambushes are realistic. Of course, goblins would not want a fair fight, but I don't know how to present that in a fun way.
Yeah, I think what you need to do is just really kind of focus on the attack that happened on the town. Yeah. Like people talking about that, really try to telegraph that they had some kind of crazy magic weapons. People don't know what. Like, because I feel like you kind of also need some reason for them to be going there, and amazing weapons that, I mean, I don't know how you would end up describing guns without, explicitly stating it.
Yeah.
Some kind of crazy magic wands or something, or machines that are just mowing down people. That would maybe let them know how dangerous it was, but then also give them a reason to go because they want to get those weapons. I don't know. I don't know if there was an explicit hook in this adventure, or if you kind of have to.
Yeah. Isn't there? I thought that was something to do with the wizard dude. There's the temple section where if you get to the temple, where that guy is hiding out, doesn't he want something from you? He ties you down or something. Oh, I thought there was something he wanted, but, no, that's right. There's the helper who's tied down. That's what it was. The janitor.
Yeah, the author.
The author, yeah.
Yeah, I think I would just maybe, I would make the ambush like a wall that it's not like an encounter that I've designed for 4E or 5E D&D where it's like, here's a hard challenge, guys. Like, the ambush is like a wall of death, right? But I think I would try to broadcast the information a little bit more. Like in The Godfather, when the dude's pulling up to the toll booth, and there's this moment where he knows something's not right. Really play up ooh, it's a little too quiet. You guys are just getting a tingly feeling, It seems kind of phony baloney to be like, hold on, guys, I need to tell you, you feel a little weird, but I think
you see footprints on the path and suddenly they've been swept away. Like someone tried to hide them up ahead.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Someone's trying to trick you.
Right. The birds are unusually loud or unusually quiet. So, put some environmental details like that.
The smell of gunpowder.
Yeah. Something like that.
It's hard to do that stuff because the fact that you're mentioning it is the tell. And so it doesn't feel, it can't by nature be organic. Obviously they're always traveling with caution, so that's why at best it's just not that interesting.
It's hard. It's challenging.
By the way, around hooks in the temple, Al-Jaba says, he is trying to coerce the characters into serving him. So that's not so much a hook, but kind of a hook because he wishes to return to Farmead, hang Blini, who's the dwarf, I guess, for treason.
He's the dwarf who's a kind of assumed control over the town.
So there is some way to make the PCs work for this guy. You could easily, reshuffle.
Yeah, but you don't find him until at least halfway through the game.
Right, but maybe he's a wizard. Maybe he's talked to you from afar or something,
I think there's a lot of good stuff here. Yeah, this is a raw work,
It's very much a zine, which is cool. I like that about it.
Definitely. I think this is worth putting in a little extra, grease to make this wheel turn.
Yeah. There's some it's small enough that it's not too hard to, read through it. And
I like that the cover says experience points, goblins, fungi,
That's great.
Adventure.
Experience points. I love, experience points as a selling.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it's for 4 to 8 characters of levels 1 to 3. 8 characters of level 3. I don't just imagine going through this adventure.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. That's the thing about this zine is like you take it, you take for granted or not for you take it as a given that look, the quality is going to look cut and paste and that's kind of the style, but then the information design is sort of all over the place, whether that's intentional or not, I don't know, but the content is just gold. You know, that mm-hmm. to me is the overall feeling. It's just, you know, A plus content, B minus information design.
Yeah.
And C for dungeon design, although I like the content, but it looks like a octopus or something. And I just don't find that kind of a single hub with a bunch of spoke design to be very interesting. Because what do? You just say, well, you can go this way or that way or that way or that way or that way. You know, I just don't find that very appealing.
So, yeah, what about intimate connections? What are you guys tweaking? What are you changing? What are you tacking onto this thing, et cetera?
I think it would be really interesting to run this from the perspective of the goblins, mm-hmm. where you play a group of goblins who have to go on patrol and or protect the dungeon. And you wouldn't treat it as like a war game. You treat it as, you know, there are these like forces coming from the town to gain entry to your dungeon and you're able to, you know, defend it, but here are the limitations. And the dungeon is also a bit dangerous for you. You know, that's kind of what I was thinking is that I was much more interested in what the dungeon, what the goblins are doing than what any of the people in this realm were doing. That's my takeaway from it.
Yeah.
The goblins are very interesting.
because they speak French.
They speak French. They have inherited French knowledge of feature of, I don't know if you say futuristic, but you know, real world weaponry and also inherited PTSD from
soldiers. They get flashbacks from
they are kind of tragic figures here, aren't they? With these like these inherited memories that they can't do anything about.
The thing is, the story of their leader is like he was human, turned to goblin, rose up through the ranks, and now runs the goblin tribe.
Yeah.
And
what
does he want? Revenge? He wants revenge? It's so out
on his own sons.
It's really one of the on his own children.
Very Greek.
It's a very this is an the content is so unusual and
there's kind of a soap opera quality to some of the twists going on.
Well, you heard mine, so Nate, why don't you give yours?
I would probably work on coming up with a hook that I really felt would get the players going, which is, I think something about like the promise of this advanced weaponry would be pretty good. There's so many good details in this. In the town, there's like the boats, they describe boats that could be docked there. The last one. Oh yeah. There's like a, what's that one? The Nautilus. It says that the captain or the chief mate is serving a mind controlling colony of barnacles below the ship. That's really great. And that he buys goblin slaves. So I feel like maybe stopping goblin slave trade could be another hook. Maybe bring the players in on the side of the goblins somehow.
Yeah.
I feel like you could do that and still have the, I don't know. I feel like it's because of the plot and the twist, it's all pretty messy that, they could end up, you know, working for either side.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. For me, I think I would grab a different map for the dungeon. I think I would just, I don't know. I think I would just make it more, just a little messier, I think.
It's not that interesting because you get into this room and then kind of everything is there. And I just find that hard to describe.
I like the encounters here. You know, I like the captives. I like there's one room where like the, they're not monkeys. They're like something like a monkey. They've taken over
tamarins.
The tamarins. They've taken over this section. I might add some faction-y stuff with the goblins. Like maybe there's some goblins that have eaten so much soldier brain that they've fully gone, like they are French soldiers, you know, and they're like, no, we're not goblins.
When you get in the dungeon, they should have like a full French dinner going on, and it should be full French culture.
Also,
going on in there.
I would put in like a rebellious faction of goblins that are like, no, we're not following, you know, goblin portal master or whatever. Like, we just want to get back to France.
You're gonna have the French Revolution going.
I'd have a French Revolution faction. I think that'd be a fun way to play the goblins against each other and, you know, get in deeper into France.
Yeah.
It was sort of a missed opportunity that there wasn't more cockroach related business, like Cult of the Cockroach God and stuff. Uh-huh. I feel like you could have that in there, like a separate group who just want their temple back or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, tonally, this is totally different, but we have a roach god on an island. We could throw this in a thousand islands and have a totally, you know, left field World War One adventure there. It would it's totally incongruous, but I think, you know, it might be a fun diversion.
Yeah, there's one of the random encounters in the town. If you're on the beach, is the telepathic wells bring news of especially vicious pirates.
Oh, yeah. I like how there's a cove that the pirates go to or something. Is it?
Yeah. I would maybe make those pirates be the cockroaches coming back to take the island or something.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this is another island, you know, we're building like kind of a mini campaign of islands. Put this one. What are the other ones we've talked about? The Black Crag. Mm-hmm. Tacking on to, I don't know, man. Yeah, it's an island. You don't need a lot of work to connect this to other island adventures. You know, you got a boat here. They can find this one, have a good time.
I agree. That's one of the nice things about island adventures is they force you to work within a theme, and it's limited constraints. Mm-hmm. Nobody's asking, well, wait a minute, like, why can't I just go over the mountain? There are no mountains, you know, or there are, but they're, you know, it's nice. Islands are nice.
It's geographically isolated. Of course, this is like another episode of the show. You know, it's naturally episodic, you know. Yeah. I think that is a fun way to structure a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I feel like we've talked about as much as we can for this zine, which is saying something. It's packed with interesting details. And I'd love to see another one of these from Tito. I know this isn't the only thing that they've done. There's something else that they did after this, but anyhow, I liked it. So cool. Good suggestion, Brad. And I hope it's very much a Nate Treme kind of thing though. Don't you think? This just felt like something that you would like.
Yeah. Like, I wrote down like the time God roach, that's little antenna come out, and if it touches someone, they age rapidly. I love that.
Yeah, that was good.
I wrote down, I think this was from some random encounter if you eat or something, but one of the possible effects is your teeth fall out and then regrow as fangs. Uh-huh. That really speaks to me a lot.
Yeah, one is a large floating standing stone radiating magic cannot be moved, but if touched, roll 1d4 once per character. And then one is becomes fluent in Draconic. Two is permanently lose 2 HP. Three is permanently gained 2 HP. Four, teeth fall, regrow sharp fangs. 3 days later. I like how simple. Oh, what was the deal with the tombstone recently built with the name Tanho carved on it? With no body? What is...
Yeah, that kind of felt like an inside thing that wasn't being explained, but I don't know. There's also, you find the book by like a Brazilian author in one of the things. It's like a real book. It's like a folk book.
The Tanho thing shows up again. There's like a diary, and then also Tanho owned a market, but the owner was missing and his son ran it. But I don't understand what happened to Tanho. Am I missing? It's just weird.
I don't know. I was scratching my head. I feel like a lot of the random encounters, some of them are like ready to go. There's like interesting stuff to engage. Some of them feel a little half cooked. Like I don't know quite what to do with some of these things. They're just kind of like, oh, cool situations where you describe and the player's like, oh, cool. Okay, let's move on, you know. A gravestone with Tanho on it or whatever.
And his axe. Do you find his axe or something at some point? There's like three Tanhos, but maybe I'm missing the story of what happened to Tanho.
It's right. And, you know, when players see that, what are they going to do?
Right.
I mean, do you want them to dig up the grave? They're just going to say, oh, cool. Okay. Well, let's move on.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
A little, maybe I need a little finessing on some of the random encounters, but some of them I like. Farmers ask you to judge their cabbage contest. Great.
Yeah.
Great. I would play that as is. There's no conflict here. The players would eat cabbage and we'd have a little cabbage episode here. That's
I think that sounds good to me. You know, I'm ready for that.
Yeah, like, oh, you know what this would go well with is that the Gone Fishing one. I feel like it's simpatico with that adventure. Just random stuff happening. It's kind of funny. I guess the French part, maybe it's what connects it for me is maybe there's like a French incursion into this reality or something. So, all right. Any other comments or are we good?
I'm done.
Nate?
Yeah, all right. I think I'm good.
Yeah. Nate, before we go, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find your stuff and what you've got coming up?
Yeah. So, you can join my Patreon to get a lot of stuff I put out. I have a lot of stuff you can download on there that's not available anywhere else. And that's patreon.com/HPS for Highland Paranormal Society. I have a website, HPS.quest is one that I don't update as much as I need to. And then I have another one if it's just natremay.com or HighlandParanormalSociety.com, they probably all go to the same place. You can buy some of my stuff in print. If you search my name, probably on Exalted Funeral, they still have some things. I think on Almanac is still in stock. Collects a lot of my earlier Patreon stuff. On Spirit Witch, I have a few zines on there. I think they have a Halloween adventure I did on there that might, I can't remember if anyone else has it. It might be exclusive there. If you look on Spirit Witch or Exalted Funeral, you'll definitely find some stuff.
Sweet. You got any, I know you always have Patreon dungeons and cool mini games and stuff cooking. Do you have any like bigger projects you're working on right now or anything coming out soon that you want to hype up?
Yeah, I'm working on, I have like a few kind of bigger adventures, which for me is probably like a normal size adventure to other people. But I'll be printing some of those soon. I'm about to print out one to send out to patrons.
Sweet.
And you can Patreon's definitely where you'll find most of my stuff. But yeah, I'm trying to get a sort of next installment in the series that started with Dogtooth Valley. The Pocket Realms. So that cool. same format, that same size, I'm trying to get that done and printed too. So keep an eye out for that. And that's great. And then that Old School Essentials, they just came out with those adventure anthologies. I think me and you two, Brad, are both have adventures
that's right.
in there.
We're both in there. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So go buy that as well. Tell them and send them a message saying that you only bought it because of Brad and Nate.
Yeah. Volume 2. Just Brad, just Nate.
screw those other guys.
No, there's so many good writers in those books. There's like it's all great. Killer. Yeah. I don't think there's a miss on those. Yeah. So that's cool.
Before we go, by the time this airs, I think it will be, let's see, it's not, what's next week? Next week is because it's not going to air next week after. So by the time this airs, I will have launched my Kickstarter for the Karen Second Edition box set. So go look for that if you feel like it. It exists and is out there. And also go look for Brad and Nate's anthology for OSE. I will put links to that in the show notes as well. Anyways, it was really great having you, Nate. Glad to finally get to meet you.
I'm excited to be here. I've been listening to the show for a long time.
Thanks, Nate. You're one of my RPG heroes, so it's cool to chat with you. Thanks for being here.
This has been Between Two Cairns. You can find us at betweentwocairns@gmail.com or patreon.com/betweentwocairns. If you sign up for our Patreon, Brad may or may not send you a little image of a druck. He's about 25 behind, maybe more at this point, but that'll happen eventually, right? Right, Brad? Right? Yeah, hey, you know how I edit this podcast every week? All you have to do is draw ducks. Uh-huh. That's it. Drucks, excuse me.
I think it's way more hours of work than you think.
I believe you, but you know what else is a lot of hours of work? Editing a podcast every week.
I'll get there.
To get those duck nipples anatomically correct. You really got to reference a lot of stuff.
The shading alone takes me, you know, I can't even say.
All right. Well, anyhow, thank you to Bobby McKelver for the music and to Direct Sun for one of the bumpers. We will, you're making a face, Brad. What is that face? What was that?
Oh, just remembering embarrassing things I've said in the past. Yeah, unrelated.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, bye.
Wow. Excellent. All right. We're out of here. Take it. Bye, Nate. Bye, Brad.
Bye-bye.